kidney disease is a growing health problem in the United States. A report by the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, determined that almost 17% of all adults above the age of 20, that is, one in six individuals, has kidney disease. Chronic kidney disease is a serious condition that can lead to decreased quality of life, increased health care costs, and even premature death, and it's on the rise in this country. Untreated, it can result in end-stage renal disease and require dialysis or kidney transplantation. Upstate Medical University and University Hospital offer the only kidney transplant unit in this region. And joining me this morning to help us understand kidney disease and what can be done about it is Dr. Sriram Narzapur, Associate Professor of Medicine and the Division Chief of Nephrology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Narzapur.
Hello, Linda. It's a pleasure to be here.
Same. Well, it's a pleasure to have you. So let's start out by telling us about kidney disease. Help us understand it. What do the kidneys do for us?
The kidneys do more than most people are aware of. They actually function in many different respects to help control the body's chemistry. Everybody knows that kidneys make urine, and they equate urine output with kidney function, but that's far from the whole story. A lot of what the kidneys do is related to controlling how much sodium and potassium and other electrolytes are in the blood, controlling acid-base balance, things that most people don't even feel. They also produce several hormones, including a hormone that makes red blood cells, and they're involved in breakdown of many medications as well as chemicals that the body produces. So a lot of effects and events that control metabolism.
So that really keeps us healthy, basically, overall.
Absolutely. And the problem is that when the kidneys are working well, you don't notice anything. When they don't work well, we have a lot of very subtle and very serious problems.
So what causes the kidneys to malfunction? Why would they start giving us trouble?
The kidneys are essentially composed of millions of small, tiny little blood vessels. They're called glomeruli, and these glomeruli are relatively sensitive. So anything that can damage blood vessels, whether it's blood pressure, cholesterol, many of the other issues that affect heart disease and strokes, etc., also affect the kidney. There are other unusual effects on the kidney, but by and large, the biggest issue is related to vascular problems.
So issues like diseased entities like diabetes or high blood pressure would be clearly a source of problems for a person. I mean, their kidneys.
You've hit the nail on the head. Diabetes and hypertension form the bulk of mild and severe chronic kidney disease, and they are unfortunately booming in incidence and prevalence. So as the population ages, as the population gets heavier, we're seeing more and more diabetes, we're seeing more and more hypertension, and we're seeing more and more long-term complications of these disease states, including chronic kidney disease and renal failure. And part of the scary thing is that we are seeing it earlier and earlier in life. So teenagers now present with complications of diabetes when it was a very rare event 10 or 20 years ago.
That's really quite alarming, actually.
It is. Yeah. I think it is clear-cut that this is a epidemic that is not only expanding in the United States but worldwide as people get heavier.
So you think it's because of sedentary lifestyle and poor eating habits that these kinds of diseases are on the rise?
That's likely to be the major driving factor. I mean, if you're going to pinpoint one issue, it would be the epidemic of obesity and what we call metabolic syndrome. That's sort of a linking syndrome between all these different vascular complications of obesity.
How about things like kidney stones? I know some people have a propensity to develop kidney stones.
Yes.
Is that also a cause for kidney malfunction?
Kidney stones are very common as well. They run in families. They are often very amenable to treatment and evaluation. They don't typically lead to kidney failure, considering how many people have kidney stones. They lead to a lot of pain and morbidity, but actual kidney damage is not as common as you would think with kidney stones.
How about things like atherosclerosis, though? I mean, you were talking about the kidneys are so dependent on blood flow.
Yes.
So,
and atherosclerosis is tied in. I tell patients anything that can affect your heart or your brain, like atherosclerosis or hypertension, affects your kidney as well. And it is insidious. It forms a problem that takes many years to develop. And unfortunately, you can't turn it around quickly. So the best part of the whole thing is to avoid these problems and try to recognize them early and head off the problem before it occurs.
So people who are most at risk for kidney disease are people with high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart disease. What else?
Diabetes.
Right, diabetes, clearly. Yeah.
So if I were to pick two disease states that form the bulk of underlying chronic kidney disease, they would be diabetes and hypertension. And if the listener has either diabetes or hypertension or a family history of chronic kidney disease, it behooves them to get screened for kidney disease by their physician.
So it really, there is a strong hereditary component.
There is. For many chronic kidney disease states, they run in families.
Well, I want you to hold that thought because we have a lot more to talk about. We're going to take a short break. We're going to be right back with Dr. Narzapur talking a lot more about kidney health and also illness and treatments. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. I'm Linda Cohen, along with Dr. Sriram Narsapur. And before the break, we were talking about risk factors for kidney disease and why people develop kidney disease. Dr. Narsapur, how do people know they have kidney disease? You mentioned also that people, if it runs in their families, they should probably be screened. But how would you know? What kind of symptoms would you find?
Yes, Linda, this is a tricky issue because by and large, kidney disease is silent. And I'm a little loath to say this, but it's a silent killer because if it progresses far enough, the mortality with kidney failure is very high. So it behooves us to at least raise awareness and try to figure out the answer to your question. How do you know if you have kidney disease? And the fact of the matter is, the only way to know is to do specialized testing. Kidneys function silently, they function very efficiently, and they work very hard, but you don't know if you have kidney disease unless you have a blood test and a urine test by your physician. If you have diabetes, or if you have hypertension, or if you have the family history, you should certainly ask your physician to screen you for kidney disease by doing this blood test and a urine test. They are considered standards of care by all clinical guidelines, and there are specific guidelines in particular for patients with diabetes that suggest yearly screening for chronic kidney disease. And that's the only way to pick it up. The only time you have symptoms is when you have total kidney failure, and it's usually too late at that point.
Well, that's a key point, and it sounds like these tests are not invasive. I mean, it's a simple urine test or a blood test, so they can be done pretty readily and easily.
They can be bundled in with, for instance, the cholesterol that you get or routine testing that is
performed. So if you are being checked on a regular basis, meaning having annual physicals and all of that, then you could be pretty confident that you're being screened in a sense.
You might want to ask because oftentimes it can be overlooked because it is silent to the physician clinically as well as to the patient. So unless they're thinking to check this kind of stuff in an at-risk patient, it may be overlooked for some time.
I think that's a key point. So you mentioned earlier that you're actually seeing it earlier in children as well as in adults. How does it manifest itself there?
In children, the chronic kidney disease scenario is often related to maldevelopment of the kidneys or issues like reflux where the urine is allowed to go back up the ureter and into the kidney. These kind of conditions are still relatively common in the pediatric population who develop chronic kidney disease. But now that we have diabetes creeping into a younger and younger age group, we're seeing more disease associated with protein in the urine and damaged blood vessels, just like with adults with chronic kidney disease. So children who develop recurrent urinary tract infections, children who develop hypertension, or children who develop diabetes are all people who need
candidates
to be very carefully watched.
Right. So just very briefly, can you tell me what are the stages of kidney disease? How does it manifest itself over time?
The National Kidney Foundation has defined five stages for chronic kidney disease based upon the degree of estimated kidney function. It's useful to help organize patients, but it's really not that helpful in understanding the clinical symptoms that a patient has. So even though we give a number to a patient in terms of their chronic kidney disease, I think simply recognition of the presence of chronic kidney disease is the major hurdle. And when people do that, they are able to intervene and head off complications far more efficiently than waiting until they have symptoms.
So the same thing you said about screening for an adult would be true if you have any of those kind of red flags or risk factors with a child.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
You would be screening. So treatment, obviously, is the key here, if you do then find that someone has a kidney problem. So what are the kinds of treatments that are available?
So treatment may be better referred to as prevention. If we can head off the problem before it occurs, and this is a hard sell because people don't feel anything, right? So it's hard to convince them to be aggressive about these kind of interventions. But they basically amount to things that you would do to stay healthy regardless. And that means living a healthy lifestyle, achieving ideal body weight, aerobic exercise, avoiding excessive alcohol intake, certainly avoiding smoking. That's just a disaster and there's no reason for it. And paying attention to diabetes and blood pressure control. There is ample evidence that strict control of diabetes and strict control of blood pressure results in reduced end organ effects, including blindness and neuropathy, and certainly nephropathy, which is what we call diabetic kidney disease. It takes a lot of work. It means monitoring yourself multiple times a day, paying attention to what you're eating, your exercise, and taking the medications, whether they're oral or injectable, on a regular and reliable basis. So it's a lot of work up front. The reward that you reap is really staying healthy, so you don't really experience any change in symptoms. It's not like pain is going to go away or chest pain from ischemic heart disease goes away. It's not like that. And it takes a lot of intellectual understanding to believe that this is helping you and convince yourself that doing all of this work up front is helping you live a longer, healthier, and happier life.
So it sounds to me in your role as a clinician, a nephrologist, that a very key part of your role is really education.
I like that. I think education is so important. We have tried hard to spend time with our patients, but as you know, the pressures on medical practices these days limit what we can do. So what we have done is we have a nurse practitioner who works with us, Carol Carpenter, and she actually conducts a chronic kidney disease education class once or twice a month with a small group of people going over these very type of issues and complications. So it's so important to us that we are bringing somebody in to talk at a comfortable, informal level in the evening with patients about educating them about kidney disease.
I think that's a wonderful service that you offer.
I hope so.
Yeah, because it sounds to me like you really need a partnership. The patient really needs to take ownership for their health, and especially if it's not evident or immediately evident and they don't necessarily, as you said, feel something, the fact is they need to be able to maybe go the distance, go one step further to make sure that they do all those positive things to forestall, you know, and avert a real disaster down the road.
You're absolutely right. As concerned as I get, it's the person at the other end of the stethoscope who's really the important mediator of health.
So if a person has not been fortunate enough to do the preventative types of things and they end up with a more severe form of kidney disease or renal failure, what are the kinds of interventions that are available? I know that we mentioned two of the main ones.
Yes. Before they have kidney failure, there are several things that you can do to delay progression of complications. The complications are sort of widespread and they're a little mysterious at times to patients. For example, chronic kidney disease causes anemia, and anemia obviously worsens fatigue, but it can even worsen your heart function. There are medications we can give. We can replace iron. We can give shots to help correct anemia. There are things we can do for that. Kidney disease also affects bone and mineral health. So patients with kidney disease experience bone problems downstream that begin many years before they experience any symptoms. And there are things we can do about that. We monitor bone health and we can intervene early on with everything from vitamin D to more aggressive therapy for bone health. Kidney disease also has subtle effects on neurologic and nutritional function. So it puts people into a negative catabolic state and they find that they're losing strength and muscle mass. We pay particular attention to nutrition and often we send the patient to a specialized nutritionist to go over what you should and shouldn't eat. So the diet, the medications, the exercise all tie in to how you do and what happens as things get worse.
So when they do get worse, like a person really can't function without dialysis, can dialysis sustain someone throughout and have a normal lifespan?
When kidney function falls below about 10 or 15%, that's how far it has to go. You need some type of renal replacement therapy to stay alive. The alternatives you have are really fourfold. The first alternative, and it may be appropriate in some situations, is if somebody has multiple medical problems and is very ill, they may not want to do anything at all. So conservative management is something that's worth thinking about. The other three alternatives are hemodialysis, which is blood dialysis, peritoneal dialysis, which is dialysis through the belly, or transplantation, which obviously is replacement of the organ.
Let me understand something, though. So we're in a little bit of time we have left. If you have to go on dialysis, can you have a normal lifespan on dialysis, or are you just waiting for the opportunity for a transplant?
Dialysis replaces kidney function, but very imperfectly. It does not cure the underlying diabetes or hypertension, and most patients who have those disease states, who don't have those diseases well controlled, continue to progress. So dialysis is not typically associated with a normal lifestyle or lifespan, certainly, and the underlying disease state still has a role in what happens.
So you would have to be treating that as well, hopefully.
Absolutely. You can't ignore the diabetes or hypertension.
Tell me about transplantation. I know we have only a little bit of time left. We have the only kidney transplant unit in this region.
Transplantation improves survival and quality of life. Unfortunately, transplantation is almost a luxury because of the unavailability of deceased donor kidney organs. Ideally, if a patient has kidney failure, if there's a living donor available, the best outcome is achieved with that match. Otherwise, they have to go on a deceased donor transplant list. And in that case, they may have to wait a period of time, anywhere from weeks to years, for an appropriately matched kidney.
Well, Dr. Sriram Nazapur, thank you so much. Kidney specialist, nephrologist, chief of the nephrology division at Upstate Medical University. Thanks so much for joining us today, giving us an overview of all this. And hopefully we've answered some questions and enlightened some people about kidney disease and the need to be screened and to prevent the difficulties that occur down the road.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
We have to take a short break. This is Linda Cohen. We'll be back with more HealthLink on air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.